Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, here we go. Here we go. Can you guys believe it that it's almost Christmas?
Yes.
This is... Yes?
Yes, I can believe it.
Yeah, boy.
I've been waiting for this for a year.
Yes, well, we all have.
Why? Are you getting presents?
Just curious.
No, but I'm giving a lot of them.
Okay. Well, that's good.
That's good.
Even better, actually.
It's a lot more fun.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I have these two folks here, Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat, and this show is all about you and your health. So usually, Jerry and Samira, we start off each program with a little bit of teaching and before we take calls and all that sort of good stuff.
Right.
So it seems appropriate that you give us a little information. I'm assuming it's going to at least include something about the virus or vaccines and stuff?
Vaccines. Okay. Vaccines, sure. Although you almost distracted me with presents, you know.
Yes, okay. I know. I would love to talk about the presents.
Okay.
That's okay.
Well, shall I tell everybody what I'm giving my daughter?
All right. Please tell us.
Yeah. Sewing machine.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, she's 8 years old.
Okay.
And last summer, she took a little class at summer camp.
Uh-huh.
And she took a class in sewing. And she had a wonderful time making clothes for her dolls and pillowcases for them and stuff and a little quilt that she can, you know, put her American Girl dolls down under a handmade quilt. And she's just having a wonderful time with it. So Bandine suggested we get her a sewing machine.
Great idea.
So I went out looking at sewing machines. You know, it's a kid's sewing machine. What can it cost,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. I mean, the plastic encased lowest end stuff you're going to throw away in 6 months is $300.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
You know, I never, do you realize there are sewing machines that cost $16,000?
I have no idea.
Not for my daughter. Can you imagine how many clothes you can buy for $16,000? Why on earth would you buy?
Well, here's the deal. I went in and had some tailoring done on a new jacket, just a heavy winter jacket. Probably took somebody 5 minutes to do the cuffs. That's all. Just shorten the cuffs.
Yeah.
$89.
Do you know, there was a time when we used to do those things at home.
Well,
it's just that it's a lost art now.
Yeah.
Yes.
And nobody does anything like that at home.
No. So anyway, I did. Yeah. I bought the bullet and I got her a sewing. And I didn't get the absolute bottom one because I figured, you know, she'll use it for a while.
Sure.
Sure. Well, she might, if she enjoys it, if something might be a hobby or something.
Yeah.
She
absolutely. Sure.
It's such a great skill.
I'm not paying $16,000.
Okay. No, it's a skill you should have. So is it under the tree yet or is the tree up?
Well, actually, yeah, we got the accessory kits, you know, and so I wrapped the accessory kit, and that's under the tree, and the big sewing machine is also wrapped, but that's hidden out.
Got it. Otherwise, you'd figure it out.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Good.
For those of us who were hoping by this time of the month and this time of the year, we'd have a vaccine, where are we?
We have a vaccine.
We have a vaccine.
How about that?
Yes. And it's actually being distributed in phase 1A, which, you know, is... a couple of hundred thousand, 220,000 or 240,000, 220,000, but they've actually, the vials are overfilled. They're designed to give 5 doses, but most of the vials you can actually give 7 doses.
Oh, okay.
So there's about 40% more than we planned. So they give us enough that's supposed to be 220,000.
For the state.
For the state. There's actually over 300,000.
Okay.
So
that's good.
That's good news.
Yeah.
So,
who gets it first?
Well, the high-risk healthcare workers, the people are actually treating COVID patients, the nursing home folks, the first responders that have to go, you know, pick up somebody when they collapse in the street sort of thing. So they get it first. My doctors don't get it yet.
Right.
You know, we'll get it sometime in January.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're really high-risk folks. And, of course, the nursing home patients that are, you know, that 0.6% of the population that accounts for 40+% of our deaths.
Right.
They get it right away.
Exactly. So they'll distribute it to the nursing homes for...
By when? Right. Yeah. When will this actually...
Started.
It has started already.
Well, I know.
Started this past week.
How long will it take before
We've got the first 220 to 300 and some odd doses in the state now that's passed out, being passed out. And then there will be weekly shipments.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are thinking we'll probably end up you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 400,000 or 500,000 doses by the end of the month. January will get us probably another million or two.
Okay.
So, you know, all of our really high-risk people, like everyone over 75 or 80, will probably have received all their doses in January.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, you know, since they've already started. University of Washington started last week, followed closely by Swedish and then by Overlake and Evergreen.
Sure.
So they are, and JBLM, they also have their batches. So those distributions have started already. And then they are prioritizing based on this criteria who gets it and who in that group gets it first is all up to them.
And with the Moderna, you know, that just approved. That's going to bring our total dose by the end of January to well over 100 million doses. Well, you only need 52 million to vaccinate everybody over 65. And that's 80 to 85% of our deaths.
Yeah.
So we should have, you know, all of our really high risk people, basically everybody over 60 should get at least their first injection by the end of January.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. And then the second injection in 3 to 4 weeks, depending upon which make your...
3 weeks with Pfizer, 4 weeks with Moderna. And yeah, so we should, you know, by the end of February, new cases should be exceedingly rare, clinically ill patients. I mean, young people will still turn positive and get a sniffle. You know, a very few of them will get pretty sick, but not many. So... the biggest lag is actually when people die of this disease, usually on average, they've been in the hospital for 20 days.
Yes.
Okay.
And so even after you've given the vaccine and you develop resistance and you don't have a lot of new admissions, you will continue to have deaths for a while because they're tapering off for those that were already sick and they've been in the hospital a couple of weeks. But yeah, by the end of February, the death rate from this disease should be very, very low compared to where it is now.
So somebody, I heard some, and it only may be scuttlebutt, but I'd heard that in Europe, I think it was England, that there was a new strain of the virus.
There is, but it doesn't. Concerning. Uh-huh. Well, there's a new genetic, but there's a lot
mutation.
Of mutations.
There's a new mutation, yeah.
But the mutation does not appear to impact resistance from the vaccines.
Okay.
So it's a different protein complex than what the proteins. You know, I was fascinated when I did some reading a few weeks ago on the formulation, the development of this vaccine. Mm-hmm. Do you know how long it actually took them once they had a reliable transcription of the genetic code of the virus? Do you know how long it took them to come up with a vaccine from a science standpoint?
No.
About 70 hours.
Really?
Less than 3 days.
Come on.
Yeah. Now, isn't that amazing?
It is just amazing.
You know, I mean, if you look at it, what happened, first of all, of course, there was a lab near Shanghai that came up and sequenced the genetic code for the virus and tried to publish it. And the Communist Party came in and shut down the lab and basically arrested the doctors, destroyed their samples, and told them that, you know, you're not allowed to do this. You can't let the people in the West know what's going on. And then a month or so later, there was an official release by the Communist Party of the vaccine code. Once our people...
So their purpose of doing that is just to be snots?
I don't know. You have to ask the Chinese Communist Party why they decided to kill a few million extra people. Yeah, but you got to realize this is a party that kills 60 million of their own people during the Great Leap Forward back in the 60s and 70s. Yeah. I mean, they starve 60 million Chinese to death. If they'll kill 60 million of their own folks, you think they give a damn about you and me? Come on. But yeah, they, when they did release it, about a month and a half late, our researchers then had to confirm. They said, oh, here's the code. Now let's get a sample of the virus. Let's make sure that this is accurate. Once they knew they had an accurate copy of the code, it took less than 3 days to come up with the vaccine design.
Wow.
That's how far this technology has gone. They're building on platforms that have been getting developed for years.
That's
these platforms
right.
were not developed for this.
Correct.
They were developed actually back during the Ebola scare in the 90s is when they went to work on this.
Right.
And so they can now, once they've got the genetic code, can design a vaccine in the laboratory. And, you know, I'm getting these texts from friends, you know, is it true that there's HIV used in this vaccine? I said, no, absolutely not. That's in some sort of anti-vaxxer's fantasy. These vaccines, these first two vaccines at least, are totally synthetic. There is no virus. There is no organism involved at all. They look at the genetic code. They decide what they want to give a try to say this should work. They design it. They make the vaccine by putting the amino acids together in the laboratory, totally synthetic.
Yep.
No live critters of any kind involved.
No. Yeah. It's just a sequence of protein molecules. That's all.
And then they tried it out on animals and said, does this kill the animal? And they said, no, don't kill the animal. Do the animals make antibody? Yep, sure do.
Yeah.
Hey, let's try it on a few people. And so they got permission from the FDA and they tried it on a few people. And sure enough, the people made the vaccine, made the antibodies, and they didn't get especially sick. Sore arms, little low grade fevers, but you know, that's expected with most vaccines. And, so then they had to gear up for larger tests. Developing the vaccine was incredibly fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's the testing phase. Finding out, does it work on animals? Then does it work in people? How many people? You have to recruit 30 to 40,000 people to give this to, and you have to give it to them long enough to find out if the half getting the placebo gets sick more often than the half that took got the vaccine.
Yep.
And you can't give the people, you know, a test case of the virus. You just have to wait and see how many of them get sick in the real world.
Right.
That takes time.
Right.
The wonderful thing is, though, that Trump went to the FDA and the regulatory bodies and said, get the hell out of the way. We're going by the science. You know, generally, they would do the phase one trial. They would do the animals, and then they would go to the FDA and they say, can we try this, you know, on 30 or 40 people? And the FDA would hem and haw, and in 6 or 8 months, they'd get permission to try it.
Right.
And they'd try it, and then they'd send it back to the FDA and say, hey, guess, here's what we found. And it would then take months again before the FDA would say, well, that looks pretty good. Why don't you put it? And that's why developing a vaccine takes 2 to 3 years at a minimum.
True, but they also got a lot of funding from the government concurrently while they were running their trials. The government removed that.
But the government got out of the way and they were doing it concurrently.
Right.
It's, you know, as the data was going into the government on a weekly basis during the trials. So they were always up to date on exactly what's happened in the last week. And so people were able to make decisions in a hurry. Okay. Now, I would point out, however, that Great Britain had the same vaccine from the same companies with the same process, and they approved theirs several weeks ago. So
despite
doing everything we can to get our bureaucrats out of the way, we're still slower than the British. But anyway,
it is what it is.
But we're years faster than we've ever been before in history.
Yeah, and I know an orthopedic surgeon and his wife personally that in England that have already received the vaccine and are doing great. No problems at all, no side effects. So they were frontline workers, and they were approved. And in England, many people are getting it anyway. So they're ahead of us.
Well, it's a much smaller country.
It is.
So it's easier to get them all vaccinated in a hurry. And it was a smaller government.
Yeah.
Smaller country, smaller government, a little faster.
Yeah. You know.
Interesting. Well, this is good news. Good news. It's not going to be long. California and some of these other states, Does that mean they'll open up relatively
quickly? Well, you know, I don't know. The people that they were saying that because Mr. Trump was involved, they don't want to take the vaccine. I say, put on your mask, go to the basement, stay there another 6 years. I don't care.
Good. Great idea. Great idea. We got to go to a break. When we come back, I actually have got some emails here. We talked about libido. I think it was 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Since then...
You and I are guys. What else do we talk about? Well,
I don't know what you guys talk about here.
I was talking about on Leading Edge Medicine.
Oh, here on the air.
That's right. We had some callers call in. And that has created additional interest. So before we take some calls, when we come back, we're going to talk about libido for just a little bit. So don't go far.
Yours?
More. More Leading Edge Medicine as soon as we come back.
When considering stem cell therapy, it only makes sense to consider the only doctor with over 30 years of legitimate experience in pain management that deals with stem cell therapy. And that's Dr. Dan Nelson with ProOrtho. Listen to what a satisfied patient had to say.
I'm in my mid-70s, and I had had my left knee replaced. I just hated that whole process, and that motivated me not to do that again. It's time to get information about other alternatives, and I want people to know right from the beginning that I was so impressed by your staff, and so I got all my questions answered and was really guided very carefully, and that meant a lot to me. So I would say you are not taking any risk or losing anything by using this opportunity of contemporary medicine.
And comparing one to the other on a scale of 1 to 10?
I would say the stem cells a 10, the knee replacement to me like a 3. And it's a miracle, really.
You should consider stem cell therapy, but call someone with experience. Dr. Dan Nelson with ProOrtho in Kirkland. 425-823-4000. 425-823-4000.
I think if you visualize your final 10, 20 years of life, you know, what would it be worth to you to feel great all that time and probably live longer? I know you don't really claim that, but have a higher quality of life in your final 10 or 20 years, what would that be worth? Either you have the exact result you want or a good reason not to. So drop the reason I'm too busy. Get to the seminar. You're going to absolutely love it.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you.
Hey, welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. Pete Talbot here along, of course, with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Now, I did say that we're going to talk about libido, but, you know, we've got some calls to make or to take. And so I think what we're going to do, I'm going to deal with these emails that we receive about libido just a little later in the first hour here. So, you know, don't go far. We're going to take a call or two, and a little later in this first hour, we'll answer some questions about libido. So let's do that now. Let us now go to Charlie in Buckley, who's got an interesting question for us. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dr. Nixon was talking about last week or 2 weeks ago about having your testosterone checked. Mm-hmm. And I guess you're supposed to have free testosterone range, but then what type of testosterone should a person take, like creams or SABs?
Great question.
Yeah, we always use the transdermal, the creams, the vast majority of the time. I think out of our 1,000 or so guys, we have 2 or 3 on shots for one reason or another. We have other things we can use to enhance your own testosterone production that we use for some men. But if we're giving testosterone supplementation, I usually use a transdermal cream. And that's because, it's just that young men peak their testosterone twice a day. Okay. We get a big surge at sunup every morning. And that's why young men wake up in the morning horny. They want sex. They've got a big testosterone surge first thing. Our levels then tend to drop during the day. And that allows males to work with each other and not kill each other.
Yeah.
Because we drop our testosterone load midday. Then we get another surge about sundown. And that's why when you were young, you know, you were at sundown, your spouse was trying to fix dinner or clean up the dishes, and you were standing behind groping her.
Only when you're young, huh?
That was, well, or on supplementation like us.
That's right.
But yeah, and then at night while you were sleeping, it dropped again. So the problem with things like shots is that you take a great big dose, you actually get an overdose for several days to a week, and then your levels drop down, and you go through the physiologic range. And then when you get too low, you take another shot and you boost it too high again. I prefer to put on a cream first thing in the morning. I check your level about 2 hours later when you're going to get your peak value, the highest value of the day. And that's what I use. I want to know I don't overshoot. I want you in a good, healthy range. Then in the evening, we have you wash it off. Okay. Now, I do have a few guys that put on a smaller dose twice a day. They'll put some on in the morning, and then they'll go to the gym and exercise and wash it off. And then they put it back on. So, you know, there are varied modalities, varied patterns we use depending on the lifestyle of that individual person. For instance, if you're somebody, if you're one of those lucky folks that goes home midday to make love to your spouse halfway through the day, okay, well, then you're going to be applying it on a different pattern than the guy that's, you know, his sex is at night or his first thing in the morning. And because what we want your wife to have a robust testosterone level, but that male dose on your genitals does not belong in her vagina, because that very, very high dose locally in the, on those delicate vaginal tissues will give her an androgen vaginitis. She'll get itchy and burny and think she's got an infection. And it's just your testosterone that you're misapplying for her. So, you know, there's not a simple answer. The answer has to depend on the individual and what is going with your life and what are our goals and what are our target ranges and how can you personally apply it best. And, you know, people like me, you know, I've had the mid-range testosterone load of a 25-year-old for 22 years now. Okay. But I'm very sensitive to moods. If I'm going to spend my time with grandchildren or great-grandchildren, I want lower levels because I become soft Grandpa Jerry. On the other hand, if I am having to, you know, beat up people on a business deal, I want my levels up high enough that when I walk in the room, they smell the testosterone, roll over, expose their throat, and submit. You know, I want to be the alpha male from hell. But that's not the man I want to take home to my wife. So variable doses for variable purposes. That's, you know.
And that's the beauty.
By the way, we're not asking our patients to do that. All listeners, please, please don't listen. Please ignore the last advice.
Right. What Dr. Mixon does for Dr. Mixon is not what he does for everybody else.
That's right.
Well, the bottom line is that it's personalized.
It
and
is.
The problem with the shots is you take a shot, you send it way past the normal levels.
Sure.
Way past.
Well, and there's another doctor in town that uses testosterone creams, and he likes to apply it anally. He likes to actually have you put it in your anus. And that's an area where you absorb a lot, but most of my men are not real fond of putting their fingers in the rear end every day, you know, once or twice. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. And it all depends between you and the longevity doctor working together to see what works best for you and your particular situation.
So there you go. Let's go a little further south down to Olympia and talk to Terry. Hey, Terry, thanks for calling.
Yes. My question is about senescent cells. Are there foods like berries that can kill the senescent cells?
The polyphenols found in fruits and vegetables and teas are far more effective at preventing the formation or slowing the formation of senescent cells. Killing them is a different issue. Yeah. And, you know, I always approach this with multiple layers. Okay. First step, prevent their formation. high doses of resveratrol, green tea catechins, many of the common polyphenols found in deeply pigmented fruits and vegetables help you to slow the formation and decrease the number of senescent cells you're forming in the first place. Okay. So that's a dietary approach. It's fast, it's cheap, it's easy, but you have to do it for a lifetime. You know, 2 weeks is not going to fix you. That's just 2 weeks in which you slowed the formation of new cells. You still got what you got. Then you've got the next step of to kill the senescent cells that are already there. Now, there's a balance. Senescent cells are producing peptides, enzymes, chemicals that are anti-growth. They're preventing themselves from trying to grow because if they try to reproduce, they'll undergo apoptosis and die. But in kicking out the anti-growth factors, those anti-growth factors are not just affecting the senescent cell. They're affecting large numbers of healthy cells. One senescent cell can inhibit the growth and development of 12 to 15,000 healthy cells. So senescent cells are telling the rest of your body, when you're telling your cells, when you wear out, don't replace yourself. Just become senescent like me. And so they actually increase the growth of other senescent cells and have a cascading effect so that you heal and repair and grow new tissue less and less efficiently over time. Now, on the other hand, working muscle produces what we refer to in toto as myokines, more than 100 different compounds that are a variety of growth factors. Factors that help you to grow new brain tissue, new peripheral nerves, new heart, new lung, new kidney. The growth and repair and healing is produced by working muscle. So the more muscle you've got, the more frequently and intensely that muscle is worked, the more growth factors you produce. And it turns out that those growth factors from working muscle can overwhelm the anti-growth factors of the senescent cells and force them to die, force the senescent cells to go into growth mode and die. So we really are starting to believe that this is one of the primary ways that exercise produces longevity and good health, that people that are exercising regularly and have strong, vigorous muscles that they're using every day are actually killing their senescent cells at an increased rate. And so they're able to grow and heal and repair their body as they're getting older. They live longer, better lives. So exercise. Make muscle. And the more muscle you make and the more you use it, the better you are from a senescent cell standpoint. Then finally, we get to the pharmacologic interventions in which we use medications to kill the senescent cells. And in 3 days of therapy, I can reduce your senescent cell load by about 35%.
That's big.
Yeah. So, you know, let's say you just arbitrarily, you started with 100 senescent cells, and in 3 days, I can knock that down to about 65. And then the next week, I treat you for 3 days, and I'll knock that down then to the upper 40s. And then the following week, I treat it for 3 days, and I knock you down into the, you know, upper 20s to low 30s. So in 9 days over a three-week period, we can reduce that load, you know, by about 70%, which is really pretty good. The other thing to consider is how fast your body naturally clears senescent cells. Young people, if you're 20 years old, a healthy 20-year-old, your macrophages are attacking and destroying senescent cells in about 2.5 days after they're formed. So you start, arbitrarily, I'm going to say you're making 100 cells a day. On Monday, you make 100. On Tuesday, you make 100. On Wednesday, you kill that first 100. So Wednesday, you made 100 and you killed 100. Now you got 200. And ongoing, you've got a baseline of about 200 a day because every 2.5 days, you're killing the ones that you made a couple of days ago. Now, let's say you're an old person. You're making them slower. Now you're making 300 senescent cells a day instead of 100, but you're only killing them about every 2.5 weeks. Now you got more than 2,000 senescent cells sitting there.
Well, when you hear the music, that means we got to go to a break. Nothing we can do about it. So, quick reminder, you want to make one of our free health analysis appointments? Now is the time to do it. Actually, you can do it 24/7 at LMD.
lmclinic.com. lmclinic.com. Don't go far. We'll be back before you know it. Pete Talbot again, and we are so proud here on Leading Edge Medicine to have such respected and truly qualified medical doctors, researchers, and plenty of guests on our show. This is especially true with Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute. But you need to know, it's not just my opinion.
What impressed me is that they're extremely professional, high-tech. I was there getting different tests and so forth. And I was extremely impressed because I've been to another ophthalmologist, and to tell you the truth, it was old school. And all of his staff, they treat you well. You just feel like you're at a party. You just feel comfortable. It was just awesome.
If it's been over a year since you've had your eyes checked, call and schedule an appointment with one of the Northwest best, Dr. Michael Gilbert at Northwest Vision Institute. Call 425-450-2020. That's 425-450-2020.
Longevity Medical Clinic is happy to announce that Longevity Development, the business and marketing arm of Longevity Medical Clinic, has entered a strategic management relationship with Paramount Pharmacy. As a medical clinic, we cannot tell anyone where they have to go to fill their compounded prescriptions. We can only make suggestions. But for the last 2 years, we have referred our patients to Paramount Pharmacy for three key reasons. Excellent quality control, excellent pricing, and excellent customer service. And now, due to our new management oversight and relationship, Longevity Development and Paramount are actually working together to better serve our patients. A team approach to better healthcare. It truly can make a difference. And now, to celebrate and to convince you that we truly feel we can better serve your health needs while saving you money, Paramount has agreed to make an offer to all new patients willing to give Paramount a try. On your first prescription only, Paramount is offering you a 90-day supply for their 30-day cost. That's right, a 90-day prescription for the 30-day cost. All you need to do is call Paramount at 425-251-1660. It's as simple as that. Call 425-251-1660.
We'd just like to encourage your audience that hasn't come in and listened to a seminar and you folks to take a look at it. I honestly, you say 10 to 15 years on your advertisements, I think I feel better than I felt 30 years ago.
Many a tear has to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game that we know as love.
You just heard one of our patients talk about the fact that, you know, we talk about here, don't we, all the time, that you can feel and function better this next year. And we usually say, than you did 5, 10, maybe 15 years ago. This is a patient that disagreed with us. He said he feels better now than he did 30 years ago. I had no idea he was going to say that, but that's how he felt. And it is encouraging, to say the least. And as we come to the end of the year, boy, this is a time, folks, I just really encourage you to consider taking advantage of one of our free health analysis appointments. I'll talk about that a little later in the hour. Earlier in the show, we talked about fact that libido is a big issue. It often comes up here on the show. We had some emails about it. And so, Jerry or Samara, Dr. Umat, Dr. Mixon, libido is a big issue. We're not a sexuality clinic,
No. But
the topic of libido comes up a lot, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
And this guy, we often have people who have not had the libido, or maybe ED for men, or both. And as patients, very often, it'll come back.
Let me draw a distinction, though, from what you just said.
Good.
Okay. Libido is desire.
That's right.
ED is function.
Gotcha.
Two very different things. Okay. Men with erectile disorders usually still have good libido. They have the desire for sex. They lack the capacity to actually do it.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And so the ED drugs for them are very useful. The biggest problem with women is just the inverse of that. Women often lose the desire a woman can have sex even if she doesn't really want to. Okay, she doesn't need desire to function. Now, without desire, it may not be much fun, but at least she can function. So desire, libido, the desire for passion in your life is the big problem with women. And it often drops off in their late 40s to early 50s. So that's, you know, that's fairly common.
In fact, the statistics
are
pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, by 50% of men have some degree of erectile dysfunction, but they still have desire. But about 70% of women have lost at least a significant portion of their desire. You know, they may have wanted sex frequently when they were in their, you know, late teens and early 20s. And then it kind of slowly dwindled down, and now they're in their late 40s to early 50s, and it's almost non-existent.
And the thing that we try to impress upon our listeners is that you shouldn't have that fatalistic attitude,
correct,
as if nothing can be done, because very often, maybe not 100% of the time, but very often, we can get that libido back.
Yeah. But you got to realize, from a biological standpoint, the function of libido is so you'll have sex, and the purpose of having sex from biology is to have babies. And if you're in your late 40s and early 50s, you're not going to have babies anymore. Well, not only do they not want babies, they can't have them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not that shocking that the desire for intercourse drops off as the capacity to bear children drops off.
Sure. I mean,
they're congruent.
Logical.
They fit.
Right.
Yeah.
Know? It's just that in our modern society, you heard the phrase gluttons for punishment?
Well, yeah.
We're gluttons for pleasure.
Sure.
We want more.
Sure.
reminds me of a Perry Como song, a bushel and a peck. You know, I love you, a bushel and a peck, a bushel and a peck,
sure,
and a hug around the neck.
Yeah. My mom used to sing that to me.
Yeah, it's a great song in my mother's generation. But this loss of desire is not a shock if you're looking at it from biology, but the mismatch we've got is that once upon a time, people did not get married for love. Love matches are relatively new as a widespread phenomena. There have always been those rare couples, the Romeo and Juliet, who would, you know, abandon their families and run off together. But the vast majority of people who got married for most of human history did it because their parents arranged it.
Right.
And they may or may not have even met their husband or wife until the wedding. And so marriage was primarily a social and economic contract and arrangement. And whether you enjoyed the passion or not was totally immaterial. Nobody cared. And in days gone by, most men didn't care whether their wives enjoyed it or not. It was her marital duty to have sex.
Yeah, but, just lay there and think of England.
Yes, think of England. For goodness sakes. So this whole thing that we are supposed to enjoy our passions and enjoy our relationships and have passions is a relatively new phenomena in society.
Sure.
And it is not matched by human biology very well. So we have to change human biology.
So how do you do that? just real quickly. We have a whole lot of people that are God, they just moved up a little closer to the radio.
Well, you know, it depends on where they are in that curve. I mean, obviously, there's not much you want to do to heighten the average 20-year-old. She's already a glutton for punishment. But as it drops, if hers is dropping faster than her husband's, we need to either damp down him or raise her. And most men don't want to be damped down.
Of course not.
So, you know, it's the old adage, how much is enough? Not this.
Yeah.
You know, little more than I got. That's enough. Whatever it is, a little more. So what we try to do is we try to raise the woman's. And part of that is to look and see where she is hormonally. And, you know, when we were chatting about this off the air before, we were talking about, you know, a patient that had a decrease in libido, and you simply shifted her from a transdermal to an oral progesterone.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And it made a huge difference because she started sleeping better. and there was less cumbersome involvement of transdermal cream, one less cream, and it just made such a big difference because her libido just shot up. So relatively speaking, her progesterone stabilized with the oral dose. Her estrogen was already good. Her testosterone didn't need to move. And all of a sudden, there's two factors that made a big difference to her.
Uh-huh.
But as we went on, we talked about other things. We tried oxytocin for a little while for her. She had a good response. And then eventually, actually, I also recommended a PDE5 inhibitor for her.
Uh-huh.
And that also helped improve her libido. So again, it's a staged response.
That's right.
But you know, the beauty about this, Jerry, is the fact that because we in our clinic care about it, we pay attention to it.
Yes.
It reminds me of a colleague of mine who practices in Florida. And she said once that she's an OBGYN, but she transitioned to do this type of practice because her own experience was that her own libido just plummeted. And she thought, okay, well, I'm a GYN, OBGYN. I know about endocrine system and the hormones. I know how to fix this. And her residency taught her nothing about fixing this. And she was so disillusioned. It happened during her residency.
Uh-huh.
And subsequently,
so she was relatively young then.
Yes. And so subsequently, she learned about functional medicine, and she has her own practice in Florida that does what we do here. And she said it just made a huge difference in her quality of life. This is her personal experience. So the important thing is understanding what the hormones are doing to you, where you're at, and then each individual patient requires a special attention. So you have to pay attention to the ranges and how much they need for them. Yes. For it to be effective.
And then as women hit menopause, and their estrogen levels are down by at least 50%. The progesterone is down by 70% or so. So we have to move those back up. But their testosterone is often down by 70, 80%,
right.
90%.
Right.
And testosterone is the primary sex hormone for men and women. And so raising that testosterone level. Now, again, you don't want to get it up to where his is.
Yes.
But you do need to get it to a robust level. And, you know, we had a fascinating study, a paper I shared with the doctors, I don't know, 6 months or a year ago. It was a year-long study in which they used vaginal testosterone on women.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not a big fan usually of vaginal testosterone because some women will get a androgen vaginitis, and it'll get, you know, the vaginal walls will get quite irritable. But most don't. So, you know, at least in this study, they had a good result with it. But it turned out that just raising the testosterone to a more youthful range, they were sleeping better.
Yeah.
They had more energy in the daytime. Their thinking improved. Depression went away.
Yes.
And libido increased dramatically.
Right. And stress tolerance changes a lot, Jerry, with testosterone. I find a huge difference. I was also remembering another example of a relatively young couple. And she was just going along, you know, not noticing dramatic differences, certainly happy with the program and everything. And then one day I got a call from both of them. And they said, whatever you did, don't change it because her libido's off the charts. And he was always a happy camper. He had never complained ever to me. But the difference was striking and dramatic after one particular lab review. And I had to go back and say, okay, what did I do? But it was just such a wonderful story, heartwarming. They both came on the phone together, and she says, I can't keep my hands off of him. And he says, I'm just loving her the way she is. They've been married forever, and they were just happy. And just so nice to hear those stories.
When we hear these stories, this is why we do what we do. This is exciting. And again, I say this over and over again. If you're listening right now, you've lost your libido. Well, maybe you lost it 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and you figured you'd never get it back. Well,
it's hiding under the couch. We'll find it for you.
In the cushions.
It's always the last place you look.
So, again, this is just... Let me ask you guys this. Testosterone for women. How many primary care physicians care about a woman's testosterone?
Nobody.
Yeah, very few. Very few. You know, and the one that irritates me is when doctors, quote, go to counsel other couples And I hear the same thing from religious counselors all too often. Well, my counselor told me that it was just my duty and I should just go ahead and we should be having sex whether I really feel like it or not. And I just cringe. No man wants pity sex.
Yeah.
I want your body sex. We don't want, you can do it.
Again, folks, this is just, I use this illustration all the time, but this whole topic of libido is really just a small piece of the pie, a sliver of the pie that we deal with, the pie being Longevity Medical Clinic. And the fact that we have hour-long appointments and what have you, we set the stage so that you can be coached, you can be educated, you can ask questions, and we can deal even with a topic like this. And where else can you get this? I'm not sure. But the patients at Longevity are awfully happy. Let's just put it that way. And let me just quickly say, because we're probably going to have to go to a break here. The free health analysis appointments, here we are near the end of the year. You bet we're continuing them right on into 2021. So why don't you make this next year the best year you've had in 5 or 10 or 15 years, too? It's very possible dozens, even I dare say hundreds of new people are finding Longevity every month, and that's a possibility for you, too. Your first step just might be calling or going online and making a free health analysis appointment. Our first step, let us measure for you. If you don't measure, you don't know, you've heard it over and over and over again. Well, we do two free tests for you, the blood test and also the very special in-body test. And together, combined, you'll understand some of your basic health risks. That's the starting place. And like I said, you owe it to yourself. Let's make 2021 a very, very good year. I encourage you, go to lmclinic.com and schedule your own appointment. Easy, easy, easy to do. If you don't have a computer, all you need to do is call our toll-free number, 866-86-YOUNG, 866-86-YOUNG. Hey, we'll be back before you know it.
If you or someone you love is struggling with memory issues, find out about Longevity Memory. Call Longevity right now to schedule your memory consultation evaluation. 425-654-0258. That's 425-654-0258.
Did you know coffee is the number two commodity in the entire world? Only behind oil is number one. Pete Talbot here again, and how would you like to stand with me in Guatemala or Brazil to watch a totally revitalized village literally being pulled out of poverty, all because of the vision and mission of Camino Island Coffee? That's right. Camino Island Coffee helps to revitalize third world villages that are now growing their coffee beans and becoming the owner of the land while doing it. It's so exciting. And we're talking about Arabica beans that are organic and grown at high altitude and in the shade, which are far less acidic. If you consider yourself a coffee connoisseur, you ought to try a full pound of Camino Island coffee for just 99 cents. That's right, 99 cents. You will taste the difference while changing the lives of an entire village. That's what I call life-changing coffee. A full pound for only 99 cents. Simply go to CaminoIslandCoffee.com/longevity. That's CaminoIslandCoffee.com/longevity or call 866-387-5282. 866-387-5282.
I started playing in the Puget Sound Senior Baseball League when I was 51, and I started pitching. And the guy who was my regular catcher for the 3 years before I started the program was catching me one day after I'd started on the program. And he came out about the third inning and he said, "Dude, I don't know what you're doing, but you've gained about 5 or 6 miles an hour on your fastball." And I didn't go into the thing about longevity at the time, but I just kind of knew that that was what was making the difference.
Boom, 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 boom.
Does she love me with all her heart? Should I worry when we're apart? It's a lover's question I'd like to know. Does she need me?
Hey, welcome back. You know, that's an interesting little story about the guy he just was telling you. At 51, he was pitching in a fastball adult league for over 50, okay? And because of longevity, he credits that he was started pitching 5 or 6 miles an hour faster. Well, we hear these kinds of stories, don't we, guys? We hear these stories all the time. Golfing again, or getting an extra 30 yards on your tee shot. It happens all the time. When you decide to deal with your body, deal with some of these core issues, that's exactly what longevity does and can help you do, and it makes a difference. It flat out makes a difference. That's why, Jerry, you're always telling me, don't just say you feel better. You feel and function better. That we want the both, the feeling and functioning. Hitting the ball further, throwing the ball faster, walking further, going up and down stairs without pain, those kinds of things. Anyway, just thought I would remind you, this is why we make available the free health analysis appointments. I hope you'll make one. Maybe you want to throw that fastball 5 or 6 miles an hour faster. Make your appointment at lmclinic.com. And it's time for another call or two.
Okay, let's go to Seattle and talk to James. And then after James, we'll talk to Paul and then Sue. Lots of calls. We're going to start taking them. James in Seattle, welcome to the show.
Hello, James.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
How can we be of help, sir?
Well, I listen to your show quite often, and here recently listening to your program that you have for the hair loss. And mm-hmm. question I have that I understand, you know, all of what you do, and you mentioned earlier in the previous show about finasteride and the side effects
yes.
that accompany it, or possible side effects. Mm-hmm. Is there another form of hair loss, I guess, pill, for lack of a better word, that doesn't have those type of side effects that accompany it, that would be safer?
As pills, not really, no. Finasteride, in those rare occasions I have used finasteride for men to prevent hair loss, I don't use the oral form. I have had the compounding pharmacist make up a finasteride solution that they can then apply to their scalp. That way they get high concentrations of the finasteride to block the dehydrotestosterone production in the hair follicle, with getting very small amounts of it into the bloodstream.
We're having a little problem with your phone.
Like a wind issue.
Is that a wind, or are you touching the speaker to your phone or something? There you go.
Is it any better now?
Yes,
thank
much
you very
better.
Much. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that
sounds like it would be a good option. Now, is that like is it an oil? Is it a gel? How does it affect
finasteride is not water soluble, unfortunately. So they have to dissolve it in usually a polyglycol solution so that it'll go into solution. But yeah, it's the compounding pharmacist can put it in solution for you, or they can make it in an aqueous suspension, in which you get these little tiny micro particles, and you just put less than a milligram on your scalp. It's a fairly small surface area, and the pill is 1 milligram orally, but when you dissolve 1 milligram of finasteride into your total body mass, the amount that gets to the scalp is tiny, tiny, tiny. Mm. And so you're getting an equal amount of the hair follicles on your scalp that you're also getting to those areas of the brain that control your libido. And so that's the problem. 20% of your blood flow is taken up by just the brain. The scalp gets a relatively small amount. So we can give you, half a milligram, a third of a milligram on your scalp, and give those hair follicles a higher dose than you'd get from the pill, while putting very tiny amounts of it into your bloodstream. And that appears to be the safest way to do it.
As far as for me, I shower and I blow dry my hair. Mm-hmm. Can you go about your, like, I imagine you'd put it on after you shower, and then can you still blow dry your hair?
I'd put it on at night. Mm-hmm. Put it on before you go to bed and sleep with it, and take your shower in the morning. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're going to get your absorption into the hair follicles within the first hour or two after you put it on. Wake up in the morning, take your shower, blow dry your hair, go about your business.
Okay, so it only takes a few hours for it to work its deal, and then that's it.
What we find when we're using transdermal hormones is you get your peak blood about 2 hours after you put it on. So what you're really trying to do is just saturate the receptors in the hair follicles. So pretty simple.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you, James. Well, it looks like we're coming to the end of our first hour. And as I say that, Jerry and Samira are standing up and walking out of the room with the coffee cups. Be sure to come back. Come back, guys. Okay. Listen, the break isn't very long between hour number one and hour number two. So don't go far. But I do want to remind you as we end our first hour, we'd love to help you. We'd love to have you just check out our website, lmclinic.com. We got videos on there. For example, the introduction to longevity. It is a wonderful description of sort of the who, what, why, where, and when of longevity medical clinics. It's about 45 minutes, and you might find this interesting. About 95% of the people who start that 45-minute video finish it. That's unheard of for online videos. But they do finish it because it's so well done. It's just, it's not this unbelievable, you know, Madison Avenue production. It's Dr. Mixon basically explaining the basics of what we do at Longevity. You'll love it. We're not doing seminars anymore, and you're listening to the radio show. That helps a whole lot of people. But if you want more information, or you want information for your maybe a friend or a relative, have them go to our website, lmclinic.com, and watch the video. It's simply called Introduction to Longevity. Pretty basic. There's others there on sexuality. There's the two stages of aging, talking about senescent cells and exosomes and stuff. Amazing stuff. You might want to watch that as well. Anyway, lots of reasons to go to the LM Clinic website, lmclinic.com. One key reason is, as we approach the end of the year here, you can make a free health analysis appointment. And we'd love to have 2021 be the best year you've had in a long time. So make your free health analysis appointment. Yes, we're still offering $100 of free longevity supplements at the same time. Okay, here we go. We got to go to a break. Don't go too far. Jerry and Samira will be right back with the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine.